It's Thanksgiving week in the United States. We got a lot to be thankful for, and I am always thankful when I get to do the At the Ring podcast with my esteemed co-host, Sean Rourke. Sean, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, buddy. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. And I'm always happy to share the airwaves with you.
And I am happy that you always bring the opinions that, you know, look, I mean, your opinions are now cross podcast opinions because they're being talked about on other podcasts. Your Leon Draisaitl opinion from last week that I completely disagree with, but you know, hey, you know, I'm not alone in that disagreeing with it, but Leon Draisaitl being better than Connor McDavid, I think you're sticking with it for another week, aren't you?
I am. I'm sticking with it long term.
You stick with that, all right? You're alone. You be alone in the corner over there sticking with it. But anyway, you know what? We are joined this week by Brian Compton, our esteemed colleague at NHL.com. And Brian, thank you for jumping on with us, and happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Happy Thanksgiving, boys. I'm thankful I don't have to argue with Sean every single week, that it's like once every couple of months. So thanks for spreading this out a little bit for me.
It's not an argument, Brian. It's a discussion.
It's one way to look at it, I suppose.
I got some opinions on the New York Islanders, Brian, but I want to hear you first on this. All right. So this is a team you see a lot right in your backyard. They finally get to open their home building, UBS Arena. Now they're ravaged by COVID. We get that. Six players were out with COVID this weekend, and they also don't have Ryan Pulock, but it's getting late early for the New York Islanders. They are not the same team that we have seen the past few seasons. So I guess the biggest question for you, Brian, as we welcome you in here and start this off, is what's wrong with the Islanders?
Yeah, for me, guys, I mean, the COVID thing is very unfortunate, and hopefully they can get healthy here in the next couple of weeks, hopefully even sooner. But for me, it comes down to the fourth line. That identity line of Cizikas, Martin, and Clutterbuck has not been what we've been accustomed to for 5 or 6 years, aside from those 2 years when Matt was in Toronto. So they're supposed to be setting the tone right from the start. And you're not seeing that. And it's just spreading throughout the rest of the team. They don't look like themselves offensively. As we know, Kyle Palmieri has one goal. He needs to do more than that. Pageau has one goal. They need more from him. Zach Parise has not scored yet. What do they have? 31 goals in 15 games. I mean, that's not going to cut it no matter how good they've been defensively in years past. So, and then defensively, Zdeno Chara, look, we knew he was not going to be the player he was 10 years ago. But he looks like a shell of himself. It's somewhat sad to watch, to be perfectly honest. And, they're going to need more from him, especially with Ryan Pulock out 4 to 6 weeks.
It's deeper than that. To me, they are the team that they were before. They're not as good defensively, right? They're always going to be a 2-1, 3-2 team. And now they're not. They're giving up huge amounts of goals. And you know, I'm curious when the finger starts to get pointed at some of the key players. Like, to me, Matthew Barzal has not been good this year at all. Like, you could say what you want about plus minus and how useful it is. He's minus 8.
I think he's trying to do too much. But To counter you, Sean, I mean, if he's not on the ice, you almost get the feeling they're not going to score. They have no chance of scoring. So they need him. They need him to do what he's doing. And he's getting caught, you know, back checking and in the defensive zone. But they don't look like themselves at all. And they haven't. I mean, the first game that I saw live this year was in Jersey. I went with my brother. That's how I spend my nights off at the rink. And I just watching, I couldn't believe the amount of odd man rushes and breakaways that they were allowing. It was so, I was like having flashbacks from 6 or 7 years ago. Like, what is going on here? You don't see this from a Barry Trotz coach team. So if they don't clean that stuff up, they have no chance. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here.
Here's the thing, Brian. And I said I had opinions on the Islanders. I don't think they can clean it up. And here's why. Their defense is slow. They don't have any mobility back there right now. It's not what it once was. They lost Devon Taves a couple of years ago and they got by. They lose Nick Leddy, who obviously we know has had the best wheels on the team this side of Matt Barzal, at least the best wheels on D. They have not replaced him. They've replaced Devon Taves and Nick Leddy with a 39-year-old Andy Green and a 44-year-old Zdeno Chara. Yep. They're not mobile. It's not just a forwards coming back thing. Their D can't chase the puck around the way they have and have success. Mayfield's not really that mobile. Pelech's not really that mobile. They don't have that guy. And now Pulak's out too. So they're slow on the back end in a league that's fast. And especially in a division that we know is loaded and fast, you can't be slow on the back end. I look at their numbers and I say, Zdeno Chara has played all 15 games, averaging close to 19 minutes a night. I would have preferred to see Zdeno Chara play about 8 games at this point, averaging about 16 minutes. Andy Green has played, I think, 13 games, missed the last few with the COVID. He's averaging close to 18 minutes a game. Again, those two guys should be alternating, not playing every day. And that's where they are. They're lacking the depth on D. I like that they brought in Robin Salo the other day and let him play. And he's playing on out. Let him go. Let him play. Noah Dobson has to play. You can't scratch him like they did against Tampa. He needs to be on the ice. He's the most mobile defenseman they have.
Yeah, I'm with you. They've had, what, 3 or 4 back-to-backs already out of 18. And those two guys that you mentioned, then they can't play every single night. I think you're just asking them to do too much. I'm with you on Salo. He had a rough night against Toronto. You have to expect that from younger defensemen for sure. He's played all of what, 15, 16 games in North America. There's going to be a learning curve here for him. And he has that mobility that you're talking about. I'm with you. They really, really miss Nick Leddy. Barry used to rave about him all the time. And look, they didn't trade him because they didn't like him. They traded him for the cap. But now they're paying the price for having to get rid of him. And I think Salo can be a really good player down the road. I understand the fans' excitement with him, but they have to understand that you can't just expect this kid to step in and look like Torrey Krug. It's going to take time. And I think he could be of that elk, but it's not going to happen overnight. And that's the problem, because the Islanders need it to happen overnight if they're going to get back in this playoff race.
Well, that's the thing. They don't have time.
Right.
Time's not on their side now.
Agreed.
They're what? They're 13 points out of a Metropolitan playoff spot. They have 12 points.
Right.
They're further out of third place than points gained through 14 games, 15 games this season. Where do you make that up? Playing kids. Where do you find the time to say, okay, we're not getting what we need from these guys that we know can do it. Let's put the kids in and take our lumps. There's no lumps left to be taken.
Yep. Totally agree. It's a bad situation right now between the things that we've been talking about and the COVID situation. When is Josh Bailey going to come back? When is Anders Lee going to come without these guys? I mean, you look at the lineup that they had to put out these past two games at UBS. It's 6 or 7 AHL players, and they're trying to get back in this playoff race. And it's an impossible situation right now. And you know, talking about the defense again, fellas, like, fans are screaming for Lou to do something and make a trade. Who are you getting? I mean, and who's going to fix this early in the season where pretty much everybody is still in the playoff race and they're not going to be looking to shed pieces away. So it's a bad spot.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, who's going to help the Islanders right now?
Right.
This is a team that's gone to the Eastern Conference Final the past 2 years. Like, who's helping them? Nobody's reaching out and saying, oh, Lou, here you go. What do you need? You know, that's not happening. Brian, is it too much to say? And it might be, because they've only played 15 games. And by the end of it, it'll only be 19. So, you know, you're at a quarter of the season, basically. Their next 4 games are make or break. 2 against the Rangers, 1 against the Flyers, and 1 against the Penguins. If they don't start to turn this around right now, I mean, they could be, by the end of the month, they could find themselves way too far out of it. To the point where, forget about it.
Yeah, because we're going to blink and it's going to be December 1st. And then if they're not picking up points against these division teams, they're going to be in even bigger trouble than they already are. I'm with you, Dan. They've got to pick up some points over the course of this week. To be fair, I think they should have gotten at least one Saturday night against Calgary. I thought they were good enough to get a point. Jacob Markstrom was Jacob Markstrom. I mean, the season that he's having is just absurd. So, but they were worse on Sunday, and there's nothing that you're watching to lead you to believe that they're going to get out of this week, but they have to, or else it could be curtains. I'm with you.
You know, I will say, though, as much as we're dumping on the Islanders right now, we were having the same conversation about the Penguins 2 weeks ago, and they've found a way, at least temporarily, to pull out of it. You know, they go to Canada. They don't have their coach because of COVID. They have their best players coming back from COVID, and they found a way to win 3 straight games. And all of a sudden, things seem at least a little bit better in Pittsburgh's world. So that's how fast things can change here.
Sure. And they have 39 home games left. I mean, they've already played more than a third of their road schedule. So there's a ton of games at home where they can make up ground. But, you know, the COVID things aside, the things that we've seen from them over the past 2 weeks have just been so different from what we've been accustomed to since Barry Trotz became the coach 4 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, look, they're giving up 3.07 goals per game. They're scoring 2.07 goals per game. Those were the numbers under Doug Waite. You know, I mean,
they've already allowed 3 shorthanded goals. Yeah. I mean, it's bad. It's a bad scene right now. They do not look like themselves anywhere on the ice. It's scary to watch sometimes. It really is.
A power play can cover a lot of sins.
Sure.
And theirs is horrendous.
Yeah.
Theirs is at 5% net power play when you take shorthanded goals and put them into the equation. 5%.
Yep. And without Anders Lee, not to make excuses, you take that big body out of the mix on the power play. I mean, it's no offense to anybody who's healthy in there, but that's a huge hole. That's near impossible to overcome if guys like Palmieri, Pageau, et cetera, aren't going to score goals.
Let's talk about something positive with the Islanders. The arena. You've been there now. You've seen some games, seen some practices. I get to go there. I'm covering the game Wednesday against the Rangers. We're recording this on Tuesday. So I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait to get there. It's going to take me about 7 hours to get there to drive on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, driving and, you know, going to Long Island from New Jersey. But regardless.
We should probably stop recording. You should leave now, Dan.
I should leave now. There by opening face off. But what is the arena like? I mean, we've for so long have known the Islanders at Nassau Coliseum for a little bit at Barclays, and Nassau the last few years certainly had a resurgence with the good team that was playing in the building too. Give us a little rundown of what UBS is like.
It is, it's so surreal, guys. Just growing up in the Coliseum like I did, my first game was in 1984. I was talking to Jigs McDonald before the game Saturday night. That's essentially when talk of a new Islanders arena started. That's how far back this goes. And there was just decades where you thought that this was never going to happen. I covered the Flames skate Saturday morning, and afterwards I walked around the concourse for a good half an hour, and I just kept saying to myself, the Islanders are playing here. Like, this is the Islanders' home. It's just so unbelievable. Any and every amenity that you could possibly think of is there. It's still going to take some time for fans to get used to it. Just during the anthem, I recorded it Saturday night, and I couldn't believe that we were there, and this is going to be the Islanders home for the next 2 or 3 decades, whatever it's going to be. It is top notch in every possible way. They did not forget anything. Any kind of food you want, any kind of drink you want, it's there. I think there's like 17 bars in the building for fans who want to do that. Not judging, but it's really, really remarkable. And I'm happy for the fan base because they were dragged through the mud for a long time and so much uncertainty. And that's finally all put to bed. It's great to see.
Look at the acceleration of the timeline. It's a brand new building. Brian's already campaigning for another one in 30 years. 20 or 30 years, he thinks it's going to last.
Look, I don't want my grandchildren wondering where the Islanders are going to play and moving to Kansas City and stuff like that. So hopefully this does not get dragged another 4 decades for the next generation of my family.
I'm going to do the same thing when I get there. I'm going to walk around and take it all in. I'm definitely looking forward to that. I wanted to flip it out west to a team you just saw, the first team that played against the Islanders at UBS, the Calgary Flames. And I'm going to ask Sean this question because I want his opinion, as we always do. Who is the better team in Alberta, Sean? Is it the Calgary Flames or is it the Edmonton Oilers? Who's better? Who's the Battle of Alberta champion this year?
Well, we haven't done the Battle of Alberta.
I know, but yet, I want your opinion on who's better.
Who's better right now? Calgary.
Why?
Because of the way they play defense. And defense is what wins in the end. And look, they're on pace right now for 30 shutouts. 30. Are they going to get to 30? I highly, highly doubt it. But what's the controversy we had with Connor McDavid last week about he's not getting enough power play calls and you know, he's not going to change his game because he's an offense guy and he shouldn't have to change his game? And what's happened to them every year in the playoffs? Those two guys have gotten clamped down. Any team worth its salt that's going to play in the playoffs can figure out how to shut down one, maybe two lines. And then what do you have? Right? Like, that's what it's been about. Brian just talked about it with the Islanders. Their fourth line was a key line in their playoff success. Other teams, you know, the Bruins go deep every year. They have a third line. When they don't go deep. Tampa Bay had the best third line in hockey. So you have a Calgary team right now that just suffocates the life out of teams. And whether you like to watch it or not is not the question that was asked. The question that asked is which team's better in Edmonton and Alberta right now. And to me, it's the Calgary Flames because they have a system. They know how to play it. They're committed to it. Can they do it over 82 games? I don't know. But right now, if you were to ask those two teams to play a 7-game series, like we saw a couple of times last year in the way the schedule was, Calgary wins 5 of those games.
And Brian, I mean, you saw that. You saw them. The Islanders actually played a pretty good game that night, but you saw it too. And that was the thing that impressed me when I saw Calgary as well, is it's like they're a, and Sean hates it when I do this, they're like a Daryl Sutter team right now. They really are. And then you have Andrew Mangiapane, who's winning the Cy Young this year, right? I mean, he's 15 goals, 2 assists, but
14 on the road.
It's incredible the way this guy is scoring goals. He's second in the league, tied for second in the league right now with Alex Ovechkin for 15 goals behind Leon Draisaitl's 18. Yeah, I know Leon's got 18 and Connor doesn't, Sean. I get that. But it's pretty impressive. But then, Sean, we talked about their defense. A couple of podcasts ago, early in the season, we were talking about Calgary and we were wondering about their D. Their forwards do such a great job. They don't have like big name D, Tanev, Shillington, Anderson, Hanifin, you know, Valimaki, Goodbranson. But together they've found a chemistry and their goaltending is obviously really good that, you know, and Brian, I'm curious what you saw in that game against the Islanders. To me, it's just like that chemistry of the six guys. It's not one just top pair. It's balanced. And then you have the forwards who are so good at coming back too. And then you got Mangiapane scoring 15 goals.
Yeah. They've been better defensively than they were Saturday night, but they have right now the best goalie in the NHL. I don't think there's any dispute that Jacob Markstrom is the best goalie right now in the, over these past 6 weeks or so. He was fantastic Saturday night. I think he made 34 saves, something along those lines. I'm with Sean that I think Calgary's better right now because, and I think they will become playoff time too, because of Jacob Markstrom. Like, I don't think we can expect Jacob Markstrom to play on this level for 82 games, but if he's even remotely close in the playoffs, what we're seeing now, I think that's where the edge is. That's where the edge always is in the playoffs, is goaltending, right? So I think the Flames will be better in that regard. And you're right. There's nothing sexy on that blue line. I think Noah Hanifin is a pretty good player, to be fair. I think he had 2 assists Saturday night. He's putting up some points, but there's no Duncan Keith from 2010. There's no Paul Coffey from 1985. There's nothing in that regard. But collectively, you're right, Dan. It's a pretty good group. And Daryl Sutter is a really good coach.
There's a lot of guys on that team that seemingly have sold their souls to have a year, a damn Yankees year, right? Like, you talk about Mangiapane. Lindholm is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Like, and that's the thing. He's a two-way guy. And that makes their defense look better. But you look on their defense, Shillington has 10, 12 points.
Yeah.
And he's a plus 10. They didn't even want him on the team. Like, they were like, can we figure out how to get somebody else on this team? He went into training camp, basically, and you have to win a job. He still only plays the least amount out of those six guys. And all he does is put up points and not give up goals. So, and then, you know, Markstrom's a good goalie, but he's playing at a level that we haven't seen in a few years. Dan Vladar played against the Bruins the other day, won against his old team. Him and Swayman were the tandem in Providence before they each went to the NHL. You know, he's been almost unstoppable on the rare occasion when they want to give Markstrom a breather. So there's a ton of guys that are just having years that you kind of shake your head and you're like, how did this happen?
Yeah, everything's going right for them right now. I think, and there's going to be a bump at some point, whether it's the next couple of weeks in January, somewhere along the line, they're going to hit a bump in the road. It's just a matter of can they overcome that adversity? I think they have the pieces to do so, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, and you know, we mentioned Vladar. He's got 2 shutouts. Markstrom's got 5, so they have 7 between them. There's 7 goaltenders in the NHL right now that have at least 2 shutouts. Calgary's got 2 of them, which is pretty impressive.
And you know where the bump's going to come? When teams get desperate.
Right.
Look, you don't want to play against Calgary in November because it doesn't mean anything. And they ask a lot of you. mentally and physically, they ask for you to do things that you don't want to do. Teams will want to do it in February.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's 2 points on the line and you're moving between a playoff place and out of a playoff place. And all of a sudden, you're willing to go into the corner and you're willing to say, I'm going to beat Milan Lucic to this puck and I'm going to pay the price to do it. Nobody's doing that in October and November. Those are 2 points, especially against East Coast teams, right? You're going to be like, I'll wait. I'm going to save this.
That's the other thing too. Like, the success they're having against Eastern teams is just absurd. It's inexplicable. Really, there are so many good teams in the Eastern Conference that they're just beating night after night. It's really crazy to watch.
And Sean, what you've mentioned there, I think, is really a valid point. I think it's a great point that you're right. It's different now than it will be, you know, come, you know, January, late January, you know, late February when we're done with the Olympics, early March. I mean, that desperation level goes up. But what I would say to that, to counter it, is Calgary is playing that way already. And so they've built that identity to be able to handle that. As long as they don't kind of, you know, just wilt a little bit because of the style that they play. You know what I mean? As long as they don't run out of gas come mid to late March, early April, I don't see them having a problem when teams ramp it up against them. But that's going to be the key part. Is can they play this way for 82 games? We have not seen that. Sutter's teams with the Kings, we saw it. They were able to do it. They proved it, right? We have not seen that from Calgary yet to be able to play this way. We haven't seen Johnny Gaudreau be able to play like this for 82 games, you know? Monahan to be able to play like this for 82 games. I don't have any doubt that Matthew Tkachuk can play like this for 82 games. But, you know, and Lindholm too. I think he's sort of like, you know, in that neighborhood of the Barkov light. You know, I mean, really great two-way player, can score, but maybe just not the same size and ability as a guy like Barkov, a silky guy. But can they handle it? When teams ratchet up against them in late March, and you know, mid to late March, can they handle it? Are they going to run out of gas? I think that's a big question for them.
Yeah, and it's their depth, right? We're talking about Shillington as the 6D. What if one of them goes down? Everybody's going to be asked to play at a level that they're not used to playing. So, and it's a wood chipper game to play. You're sacrificing your health to play that game. There are no easy nights. There's no night when you just say, you know what, I'm not going to bring it tonight. You don't bring it. You're put on the end of the bench. So you get to the 82-game finish line, and now you put another 28 games in front of them. And, you know, now you're like, oh, boy, here we go.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes for Calgary. I wanted to talk about another team out west, the Colorado Avalanche. 5 wins in a row. There's a lot here with Colorado. Let's start with the 5-game winning streak. They hit a soft spot in the schedule, really. Vancouver twice, Seattle, Ottawa, San Jose. But their offense has come 31 goals in this 5-game winning streak. And every single one of these games is without Nathan MacKinnon in the lineup. So are the Avalanche back, shall we say? Or is this just a hot streak against the soft spot in their schedule? Brian, I mean, Nazem Kadri has been terrific. 23 points this season. He's got a 9-game point streak. In this 5-game winning streak, he's got 13 points. What do you think? I mean, is this the Avalanche now that we all expect, or are they just kind of taking advantage of some teams that are struggling?
No, I think they look a lot more like themselves. It's funny too, just going back to the Islanders for a second, Dan, I think they've played the same amount of games as Colorado, and Colorado has scored twice as many goals. That just shows you how anemic the Islanders offense has been. Yeah, Kadri, good for him. I mean, he's going to pass his point total from last year in like 2 weeks if he keeps going at this clip. It's nice to watch. And to do this without MacKinnon, like you said, it's really impressive. And I wonder too, Dan, if some of this has to do with the extension that Bednar got. You know, you put that to bed, you know who your coach is going to be. I know that they didn't get off to the start that they wanted, but I think it brings a little bit of solidarity throughout the organization that they know that this is going to be the coach. There's a lot of pressure on them once the playoffs roll around. I think they're obviously going to be a playoff team, but they've got to find a way to get over the hump now, and that's on Bednar and the guys to figure it out.
Yeah, and I look, the other thing is the goaltending, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder how much Joe Sakic is kind of smiling like he usually ends up doing whenever he makes a decision. You know, the guy that he picked is better than the guy that he let go. Now, how much of that is if it was different, right? If he had gone the other way, would his goaltender still been as good than going into free agency and kind of switching things around when you're like, why would he do that? He had the perfect answer. And Kemper's come in and he's been good. I mean, he hasn't been great, but he's trending in the right direction. At the same time, they start trending in the right direction.
Goaltending makes the team, makes the coach. No question about it. We know that. The Bednar extension, Brian, I'm glad you brought that up. I like it. I think you're right. It's just kind of answers any questions that were out there with Bednar and in his last year. So now he's got the 2-year extension going through the 23-24 season. This guy is currently tied with Bob Hartley for the most wins in Avalanche history at 193. So he is going to have the most wins in Avalanche history with the next win, which I think speaks a lot to the success he's had. But again, it's like, I hate to do this, guys, sometimes, but as good as we've seen them here in this 5-game winning streak, getting their season back on, oh, we can rave about Kadri and all that. It comes down to what they do in the playoffs. That's what this team is about. And to be honest, it comes down to what Nazem Kadri does in the playoffs and his ability to actually stay on the ice in the playoffs. This is good now, but everything that we hear about Nazem Kadri now and with the Avalanche, yeah, but, right? So you don't want to fast forward 60 some odd games from now. You want to let him play it out, but it's still a yeah, but for me. I like that they're winning. I think they're supposed to be good. I picked them to win the Stanley Cup. I like the Bednar extension. Yeah, but let's see what they do in the playoffs.
Yeah, look, it's nothing against Jared and the guys for what they're doing right now. And I like Jared a lot. I remember interviewing him when he was coach of South Carolina in the ECHL like 15 years ago. And those are really good feel good stories for me. It's nice to see guys work their way up and get rewarded. They could win every game the rest of the way. I mean, they're not going to, but even if they did, it's not going to matter if they don't perform in the playoffs. This is a team built to win the Stanley Cup. So if they get ousted in the first or second round, all the stuff that we're talking about, all the success that guys like Kadri are having, it's not going to matter if they don't perform in the playoffs. It's just not, unfair as that may sound, it's the truth.
And then does Bednar become a Bruce Boudreaux situation?
Yeah, it's possible for sure. I mean, look, this is a results business. They're putting faith in him with this contract, but at the end of the day, okay, get it done now. We're rewarding you with this 2-year extension. You have to win the Stanley Cup now. And Jared knows that. He knows what's going to happen if they don't get the job done. Coaches are hired to get fired at the end of the day. Nobody stays forever. So we'll see what happens. They have the talent to get it done. It's on them now. And just getting back to Kemper for a second, too, boys. I agree that he's trending in the right direction. This is somebody with an injury history. He's got to stay healthy. If he doesn't stay healthy, I don't know how they have a chance.
They don't. That, you know. Right. They don't have a chance because you need goaltending, obviously. They don't. And look, 2-year extension, it's not like they broke the bank here. You know right. what I mean? Like, it's not a 5-year extension
right.
for a coach. It's 2 years, you know? So, the pressure is on. Bednar knew that. Joe Sakic talked about how this extension was being talked about in the preseason. So it shouldn't come as any surprise that Jared Bednar got it at this point. So, yeah, pressure's on. Avalanche have to go win. Look, if they don't win the Stanley Cup, I don't think that's the end all be all, but you got to get past the second round, right? They got to get past the second round. And again, we're sitting here on November 23rd, a couple of days before US Thanksgiving, talking about the Avalanche trying to get past the second round of the playoffs, but that's where they are. That's the type of team that they are right now. So let's see where it goes from there. Guys, did you see the coaches room this week? We did it. Our coaches room is back. Dave Barr is a former NHL assistant coach, now coach in Vienna, Austria. I was the one working on it with him, the coaches room story. And I thought it was really interesting. I learned a lot. I hope our listeners out there read these coaches room pieces that we have weekly, bi-weekly. I'm not exactly sure. Sean knows better. I think it's bi-weekly. This one was on the top 5 power plays in the league. And I thought it was so interesting, especially how he broke down the Nashville Predators guys who were playing very, very well right now. Their power play was 23rd last season in the league, 25th in 1920, and last in the league in 18-19. It's third right now at 28.6%. And Dave Barr had a pretty good breakdown of it, of that power play, talking about interchangeability of players, how it used to be that their forwards especially would go into set positions and always just race to those set positions. And now they've worked on just having guys be able to set up wherever they enter the zone, that it allows them to get to their plays faster, and they're winning faceoffs more on the power play. They're winning 14% more on the faceoffs on the power play this year than last year. And the other thing is they're shooting from the middle high slot area, the middle to the top. And that's creating better rebounds and better looks and more traffic. And it's all made a huge difference for a Nashville team that looks better. And oh, by the way, is relying on their power play instead of being hurt by their power play.
Well, we just talked a couple of minutes ago, right, about the Islanders and their power play and how it's killing them. I mean, it either hides some deficiencies or it accentuates other positives, right? You look at them now and the Predators, and they're winning, and Roman Josi's back in the Norris Trophy conversation, and you know, Duchesne and all those guys are not being picked on anymore. Like, oh my God, these were such bad contracts. All of a sudden they're good contracts again. You know, and how are they scoring all these points? It's because the power play is a reward. You're supposed to score. You're supposed to score one out of every four times, one out of every four, every five times. That's the way the statistics work out. And when you don't in a 2-1 league, you get crushed. So to me, the biggest thing for them in their power play is their depth on it. It's not three guys anymore. Again, you know, we talk about one-line teams, one-line power play units, you figure them out pretty quick. And you put your best four out against them, and you can shut them down. It's that second group then that needs to make hay, and Nashville's getting some of that now.
And not to dumb it down completely, but I think a lot of it is the faceoffs. If you're winning faceoffs on the power play, the chances of you scoring with the man advantage increase exponentially. If you're losing and you're constantly chasing the puck behind your own net, you're not going to score. So I think the faceoff thing is huge for Nashville. But they obviously have a lot of pieces. Yossi's terrific. Duchesne's having a good year. But if you're not winning draws in the offensive zone on the power play, you're not going to score.
And I thought another thing that Dave Barr brought up in his story, the coach's room story that's up on NHL.com now, was where the shots are coming from. And I mentioned it a little briefly, the middle of the zone, middle top, high slot up from there is where they're getting a lot of shots. And he mentioned it, that when you shoot from there, you're almost guaranteed to have a net front presence. You're almost guaranteed to be able to shield the goalie's eyes, because that's where the, you know, your guy's going to be there. And the rebound is almost guaranteed to come straight back out into the slot area, you know, right around that home plate area. Whereas if you're shooting, and that's where Yossi's taking a lot of his shots. Whereas if you're shooting from the flank, from the points, right, the left or the right, and it used to be Ryan Ellis with the big bomb, right, on their power play, but he was always shooting from the left side. And it's not always going to be a net front presence there, because players are moving. And the rebound on an angle, just the geometry of it, kind of can come out and go towards the circle or out to the wall. So where they're shooting from, I think, has made a real big difference on their power play. And that's what Dave Barr brought up. But a question that I still have, we talk about their power play and it's really driving them, and it's being, you know, playing so well. They're still right now bottom third in the league in 5-on-5 goals for. So can you go the entire season relying on your power play as the big difference for you? Or do they need to do more 5-on-5? Because that, to me, they need more 5-on-5 to make the difference of them being in the playoffs in a tough division versus just missing the playoffs in a tough division.
You've got to be good 5-on-5, and because that's where you draw the penalties, right? If you're not outworking the opposition, how are you going to end up with the man advantage? And come playoff time, you know, the power play is going to be few and far between. So they've got to clean stuff up at even strength if they're going to be a good team down the stretch.
And again, it just carries you through lulls, right? Like, no, you're not going to go at 30% for the whole year unless you're the Edmonton Oilers. You're not going to do that. But if you can ride your power play through some slumps and you can steal points where you don't steal them. And that's, to me, again, that's one of the problems the Islanders have had with such a bad power play, is they haven't been able to steal points. You look at games, the Calgary game, well, they outplayed them. They did this. The goalie did this. Power play goal makes that game a lot different. Yep. So that's where your power play helps. It's those hidden moments in games where, you know, you get it and it may not be a huge goal, but it's a goal and it gets everything else going. And it allows you that one more opportunity that you might not have had if you didn't get it. So to me, they need to be a lot better on 5-on-5, but they're a team with good goaltending and solid defense, so they can win a 3-2 game and with a representative power play be okay.
Another team that Dave Barr talked about in that story was Anaheim. And Sean, we talked a ton about the Ducks last week on the podcast, and Troy Terry's point streak ends finally. I mean, it was so impressive what he was able to do, 16 games. But another big power play difference is the Anaheim Ducks. Last year, the Anaheim Ducks were 8.9% on the power play. I mean, 8.9%. We wonder why they couldn't score goals. They couldn't score at all on the power play last season. That's just dreadful. Right now, they're fifth in the league, 25.9%. And one thing that he pointed out, and we touched on it a lot last week, Sean, is the player Ryan Getzlaf, right? The player Ryan Getzlaf on the power, their personnel on the power play for Anaheim, their personnel across the ice really hasn't changed that much, right? I mean, they didn't do anything in the offseason. They didn't really make any additions in the offseason, but their personnel is just better, playing better right now. Yes, it has to do with some of the young guys, Zegras, Drysdale, Terry, no question about it. Comtois is coming on too. But Ryan Getzlaf has 13 shots on goal right now. That's not even counting shot attempts. That's just 13 shots on goal on the power play this season. That's in 19 games. Last season, Ryan Getzlaf had 12 shots on goal on the power play in 48 games. Ryan Getzlaf is all of a sudden, now it's not a ton, but it's a threat. And when Ryan Getzlaf is now a shooting threat, you already know he's a passing threat. It makes such a big difference for them, because now if you're a defense, if you're coaching against this power play, what do you do, right? Oh, Getzlaf, well, he could shoot it. I got to front him. I got to get in the lane. Oh, wait, boom, there's a pass right there, because Getzlaf has vision, you know, eyes in the back of his head to the side and everywhere, because he's one of the best passers in the league. The fact that Getzlaf is now a shooting presence, Dave Barr brought this up in a story, makes a big difference for Anaheim. And you look at the power play, 25.9% as opposed to 8.9%.
I can't believe what the Ducks are doing. I mean, the Terry thing is absurd. What a run, just really remarkable. I don't know if it's a motivation thing with Getzlaf. Does he look more motivated to you guys? Maybe that's what it is. But if you have a motivated Ryan Getzlaf on top of all this young talent that the Ducks have, and John Gibson, to me, is still one of the better goalies in the league, maybe the most unappreciated goalie in the NHL. He just hasn't played in front and behind good teams in recent years. But if they make the playoffs, they could be really dangerous just because of their goaltending. And if this is the Getzlaf we're going to see in April and May, it could be a lot of fun to watch in Anaheim.
And the other difference is Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yeah.
Right? He's finally comfortable again, it seems. He didn't have a great year last year. You know, you talk about points and shots. He had 5 power play points last year. He's got 7 this year already. Yeah. We're what, 15 games in? That was in 58. So, like, you were just talking about Nashville and their shot generation, and you have, you know, an Anaheim team that can bring it from Fowler, who we had on last week, and Shattenkirk. There's no guy to front at the point. There's no guy to chase and say, this is the guy. We take away his shot. Like, you play the Devils, you're going to take away Dougie Hamilton's shot. Like, that's how their power play works. And if it's the old Bill Belichick, right? Beat me with your left hand. Don't beat me with your right hand, because I know you can beat me with your right hand. But if you can beat me with your left hand, go ahead. And that's how you attack power plays, right? Take away the best thing. Now with Anaheim, you can't do that anymore. What is the best thing? Do you take away Fowler? Well, then there's Shattenkirk. Do you take away Shattenkirk? There's Fowler. And there's Getzlaf. And, oh, by the way, here's a kid that's scoring in every game, and he's also on the power play. So figure it out. Figure out what their left hand is and take it away. But when you know, everybody else in the league will know, and then it'll all change.
They've been good, no question about it. So it's good stuff from Dave Barr in the coach's room. You should take a look at it, no question about it. Brian, we're going to let you go. You got to get on the Islanders Zoom, I think, and see what's going on with them. So we're going to let you go. Thank you very much for about 40 minutes of good hockey talk here, Brian.
Always a pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving, boys. Thanks for having me.
You too, buddy. Lots of turkey.
Yep.
Good stuff there from Brian. Great to catch up with him. And we let him go so he could catch up with the Islanders, and who play the New York Rangers on Wednesday night at UBS Arena. I'll be there. And Sean, I got a question in the mailbag for this week. The mailbag runs Wednesday. I'm working on it today, Tuesday. But I got a question in the mailbag regarding the New York Rangers. And look, they're doing well. They're sitting pretty right now, third in the Metro, 25 points. But we know about the injury to Sammy Blais. He's out for the rest of the season with the knee injury. And the question was, what do the Rangers do with all their cap space and addressing, you know, some of their forward depth, maybe finding someone to play on that top line with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider? And remember, the Rangers are going to have, if they waited until the trade deadline, they could have about $9 million in cap space available. So they could pretty much go out and get almost anybody that they want for this season. Next season, Adam Fox's contract goes up to $9.5 million. Mika Zibanejad goes up to $8.5 million. So next season's a little bit different with the cap constraints they'll be at. But they can do things this season to improve this roster. And the question brought in two names, Phil Kessel, the Arizona Coyotes, and Riley Smith with the Vegas Golden Knights. Very interesting. One is Kessel. He's obviously a goal scorer. He's in the last year of his deal. He's not long for Arizona with the way they're playing this season. Do you look to bring in a guy like Kessel to try to play him with Zibanejad and Kreider? Right wing would make sense. Or Riley Smith is another one who I actually like this option better because of his connection with Gerard Gallant. He's also in the last year of his deal. And Vegas, we know, is going to be a contender, but they're going to have to make cap space available when Jack Eichel becomes available. So what do you think there, Sean? I mean, you look at two names. There are others to look at as well. But do the Rangers need to do something like this? And are those two names sexy enough for you?
Yeah, look, they're sexy. I mean, Phil Kessel's always going to be sexy. He's one of the lightning rods of the league. Can he recapture his form in a short run on Broadway with something to play for? I think I'd be willing to make that bet. I would certainly make it with Riley Smith, but like, is there, and you would know better than I, is there anything internally that can be done? I mean, I live here and you know, I hear New York fans all the time, and you would think that Sammy Blais, nothing against him, and I hope he gets healthy really soon, is the most important player on this team. He's never scored more than 15 points in his NHL career. Like, how is this the hole that you need to fill? And if it is, how is this a good team?
Well, I think it's not Sammy Blais. I think it represents the need for another scoring option. And it comes down to Sammy Blais is the guy they got for Pavel Buchnevich. Now they don't have Pavel Buchnevich, who played with Kreider and Zibanejad, or Sammy Blais. Right. So it comes down to filling not Sammy Blais' role. It comes down to filling that spot with another guy who can score. And yes, the answer to your question is, are there internal options? Yes, there are. It's called Alexis Lafreniere. He is playing on the third line right now with Julien Gauthier and Philip Hedel. Barclay Gaudreau is playing on the top line. That's fine for right now. Giving Lafreniere a chance to, you know, continue to get confidence, build up his that game a little bit, shelter him in minutes, those minutes on that third line. But at some point, and I think at some point soon, before the Rangers look to address this concern that, you know, of the hole of scoring, they need to move Lafreniere back into that spot that he started at with Kreider and Zibanejad and put Barclay Gaudreau back into a third line role where he is better suited to play. We saw it with Tampa. You bring him in for important faceoffs in the last minute of periods and penalty kill faceoffs, all that stuff. But Lafreniere has to be given a chance here to get some run with Zibanejad and Kreider to see if you can catch something there. Because if you can catch something there, which is exactly what you're supposed to do with the guy who was the number one pick in the draft in 2020, then you can address the hole that Sammy Blais left with another role player like Sammy Blais. You don't have to give up as much. You can go with a Kelly Yarncrook, right? You can go with Athanasiou from the Kings, other guys that are on expiring contracts, but not the big names like a Riley Smith or a Phil Kessel, obviously. I got to see Lafreniere play in that role first, and I got to see it for a while if I'm Chris Drury before I decide on anything that I'm going to do with the rest of my roster. And I wonder if that is eventually going to be the plan here for the Rangers. If it is, it needs to happen sooner rather than later because you want Lafreniere to get going in that role. But if he can't, you have the cap space, you have the wherewithal to go out and get somebody, but you don't have to do it until March.
I didn't realize that Alexis Lafreniere earn the right to play on the first line on this team with his play. He has 4 goals.
It's his skill. It's his skill. It's the way he can play the game. And I don't think you are getting enough out of him, enough out of his skill playing him with Philippe Hedl and Julien Gauthier. I don't. And I didn't think he looked terribly out of place, to be honest with you, when he was playing with Kreider and Zibanejad. I thought that was fine. Look, Kaapo Kakko took a little while to go get going this year. He had no points in his first 10 games, but he stuck with it when he was healthy. They put him, and when he got back, he was healthy. Then he got hurt and he got back healthy and they put him back with, I think he had hurt, he had COVID. No, he got an upper body injury. They put him back with Panarin and Strome. And now he's got points in 4 straight games, 3 goals, 2 assists. He's finding it, right? I think the same thing can happen with Alexi Lafreniere. And look, I'm not going to say the Rangers have built themselves a cushion in the Metropolitan Division and whatnot. We know that division. But look, they're third. They have 5 more points than the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've played more games than Columbus, but they're third. They're playing well. They're finding ways to get points. Ryan Lindgren scoring goals with 0.4 seconds left in the game. Ryan Lindgren, right? So they're finding ways. I think Lafreniere's skill, you put him up there. You see, you give him run, give him some time there. And I think you'll see what everyone expects to see, the potential that's there for Lafreniere. Because I even see that snippets of that potential when he's playing in the third line with two guys who are not nearly as good as Kreider and Zibanejad.
So if you're Chris Drury, do you pick up the phone, call Doug Armstrong,
Tarasenko,
and say, hey, Vladdy's still unhappy?
Yes, you do. Absolutely, you do. Why wouldn't you do that, right? Is Vladdy still unhappy? I don't know. I mean, why would Doug Armstrong at this point move Tarasenko, right? They're playing well. They're second in the division. He's playing well. I think, you know, if you're the Blues, you're playing for right now. You're not playing for next year or the year after, right? There's no reason for Doug Armstrong to move him. But if you're Chris Drury, you're not doing your job if you don't pick up the phone and ask.
What do you think the ask is?
Well, I think it has to be a player off your roster. Right. Because the Blues want to be a contender. So I think it has to be a player that can come in and be a helpful player for them. Is that a Philip Hedl, young guy, plays the middle, right? It could be. Is that Ryan Strome, who's in the last year of his deal, right? Another guy who can play center. It has to be that. And you're looking at a high draft pick probably, or a top D prospect, which the Rangers have a lot of. Right. I mean, they are loaded on the back end in Hartford right now with a young defenseman, and they don't have a place for these guys with Fox and Lindgren and Trouba and Miller. And now Nils Lundqvist, there's not a lot of room. So they are going to be trading out of position of strength if they are trading one of their young defensemen.
Yeah, that's not going to work with St. Louis. They couldn't even get Perunovic up until last week, and he was running circles around the AHL. You know, the D's not going to work there. But to me, that's the more interesting call. And that's a longer play. That's not, hey, let me go get this guy off the scrap heap and hope to catch lightning in a bottle. That's a, I think this guy works. And that's the final piece for me to be a contender in the East.
Yeah, but I think the Rangers can play the long game here too. You know, I do think that they can play the long game. They've built themselves a little bit of a cushion, like I said, not big. It can go away quickly. I get that. But they're playing solid hockey right now. And look, Julien Gauthier has played better of late. Kaapo Kakko's scoring of late, right? So they're playing better. They're playing a strong brand of hockey. They can play a longer game here. I don't think Chris Drury has to act right now. But I do think for the Rangers this season to put them, if you go get Tarasenko, that's a final piece. If you get somebody else, I think you just need that cushion to put yourself, you need that extra guy to push you over the top. You know, to fill that spot that was Buchnevich's spot that transferred to Sammy Blais' spot that's now vacant. And that's the biggest problem, that's the biggest hole that the Rangers have.
Yeah, it may well be, but it's somewhat humorous that they need to replace Sammy Blais, who has never scored more than 16 points in an NHL season.
No, I definitely hear you on that. Before we get out of here, how about Seth Jarvis, Carolina Hurricanes, right? Guy came in, didn't play. Rookie forward, first round pick in 2020, number 13 in the draft, didn't play at the start, made the team, didn't play. Nino Niederreiter goes down. I think it was October 29th. So in comes Jarvis on October 31st. He's played 10 games since. He's got six points, four goals, two assists. He just played his 10th game, so that burns the first year of his deal. There was questions of whether he was going to go back to Portland or the Western Hockey League, and they couldn't send him back. This guy's playing on their top line right now with Teuvo Teravainen and Sebastian Aho, and he looks like he fits in just fine right there.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that's what we just talked about with Lafreniere, right? Like, at what point do you give a guy the opportunity to make that run and see that he belongs and get return on your value? You don't draft in the first round for third line wingers. Like, that's not what you're picking in the first round, especially at the higher end of the first round. But I mean, that's Carolina to a T, right? How many guys had to wait forever to get into the lineup, right? And had to sit in Charlotte or Chicago in the AHL. And you're like, how come that guy's not up? You know, how come he's so good and they just keep waiting, right? And he's been great for them. There's no question about it. He has NHL skill for sure. He's smart, right? He's got a good hockey IQ, which you need. He doesn't have the size that you want, right? But he plays the game the way you want to see a guy at his size play it. He's only 5'10", maybe 175. I think that might be a little bit kind, but you know, who am I to say anything about anybody's reported weights? I just think he's that kind of guy. And then you put him in a Rod Brind'Amour system. To me, Rod is so good with young players because he's fresh off of doing it himself, right? Like, he's demanding, but he's not defining. You had a bad game. You stink. You're never going to play again. It's you had a bad game. Here's what you did wrong. Go out and do better next time. If you do it five times, then we're all going to have a problem. But I'm going to teach you how to do it right, and then you're going to go and do it. And for the most part, that's what the Hurricane players do.
And what Rod, I think, is so good at, too, is recognizing skill set. When you get a player in who's got some questions, right? You recognize his skill set and you put him with players who can enhance his skill set, not taking him in as a guy who is a replacement player in the lineup because Nino Niederreiter got hurt, moving other guys up in the lineup and putting Seth Jarvis, who's a first line scorer in the WHL, on a fourth line role in the NHL. It's not going to help him there. So what does he do? He puts him with two of their best forwards. You know, Aho's their best forward and Teravainen's one of their best playmakers. And he puts them with these guys and says, you can fit with them. They'll do a lot of the work, right? We know that those two guys are going to, they're worker bees on the ice, and you play your game. You're not going in to play a fourth line role, 9 minutes a night. Maybe you'll get a scoring chance, right? If you're on a shift, no, you're playing the same type of role, different position, same type of role as you were playing in the AHL a little bit last year in the Western Hockey League. And that's going to make you comfortable. And I think about Tony D'Angelo, question marks all over him, right? Put him with Ian Cole. Ian Cole's a stay-at-home guy. He can handle a lot of that. It allows Tony D'Angelo to play his game, right? This Rod Brind'Amour, it's smart coaching. We often see guys come in, younger players, and they have to fight their way up the line. Look, we're seeing it with the Rangers, right? We saw it with Kako the last few years. We're seeing it with Lafreniere now. Sometimes you just got to put guys in and deal with their mistakes, deal with it, but put them with players that can enhance their skill set. And that's what Rod has done here, I think, with Seth Jarvis. Will it last? I don't know. I mean, the kid's 19 years old. He's 5'10", 175 pounds at 19 years old. But right now, he looks good in that spot, and you get exactly what you can get out of him right now. And he's learning as he's doing it.
Yeah, and there's two things at play here. One is he's playing in Carolina, right? So that makes it easier. The spotlight is intense because it's the NHL, but it's not as intense as if it was Boston, New York, Montreal, right? He's not Cole Caulfield. He's right. Not. And they're not sending him down, you know, to hide him if things start going wrong. And two, like, the AHL is littered with guys who can score in the NHL who have never been given a chance. Like, you go down and you look at the AHL scoring leaders every year and you're like, oh, wow, look at that kid. He's got 40 goals. And then somebody gets hurt and he gets called up and the 40 goal scorer gets put on the third line. Go out. You have two games to prove yourself. This guy's coming back in two games. If you score, you can stay up. If you don't, you're going back down. What are you going to do? Like, A, you want to kill your center because he can't get the puck to you. And B, you put it on your stick and you shoot it into the net, not the goal net, the net above the goal, because you're like, oh my God, if I don't score here, I'm back on the bus riding to Springfield.
Right.
So, and that's not happening with this kid. Like, he's been given the opportunity to deal with players that, as a scorer, you need to deal with.
Yeah, no question. So he's interesting. Definitely another guy in Carolina. They got a lot of guys that are good, you know, worth keeping an eye on. Before we get out of here, we did get a question. We love it when we get questions sent to us at the rink on Twitter. We got a question. Why is Jiri Lehtinen — this did come from a Finnish guy — why is Jiri Lehtinen not in the Hall of Fame? And we were just talking about a three-time Selke Trophy winner, a Stanley Cup winner. Jiri Lehtinen was one of the best defensive forwards around. I think he's the last forward, not a center, to win the Selke Trophy, Jiri Lehtinen. I think it's always a center winning it, but I don't believe that he was. And my answer to that question, Sean, and you tell me if you disagree, is if Rod Brendamore is not in the Hall of Fame, then Jiri Lehtinen's not in the Hall of Fame. Brendamore played more games, had more points. He also won the Stanley Cup, as a two-time Selke Trophy winner, a dominant two-way forward. I think he easily could be in the Hall of Fame. He is not. And if he is not, Jiri Lehtinen is not.
No, and I loved watching Jiri Lehtinen play. How many times have I championed the two-way guy over the skill guy? We just did it last week with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. I don't think it's a finish argument. I don't think it's any of those arguments. He was a great two-way player. He never scored more than 52 points in this league.
Right.
Like, how many Hall of Famers can you look at other than defensemen and be like, he scored more than 50 points twice in 15 years? Like, they don't exist. They're unicorns. He did one thing really well, and he did it maybe better than 99% of his peers, but that doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame. It's not a one skill league.
And I do think Rod Brendamore should be in the Hall of Fame.
So do I. And he's making a stronger case now, right? Like,
as a builder.
Yeah. Well, he should go in. It should be the totality of your resume, right? That's always been the argument about Europeans. Like, let's talk about what they did in international hockey. It's not the NHL Hall of Fame. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame. And it should be the totality of what you did in your career. And Rod Brindamore's writing another chapter now. And that should all factor into it. And he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Now, his numbers alone, I think, in his career alone, just his playing career alone, warrant Hall of Fame inclusion. But anyway, that is it for us. Sean, happy Thanksgiving, bud.
You too. I got a question for you before we go, though.
Okay.
What's the best side dish on the Thanksgiving table?
That's easy. Well, it's not so easy anymore, because my brother-in-law started making this stuffing with this sausage in it, and the sweet Italian sausage that is just incredible. But for years, from growing up, it was sweet potato mash with marshmallows baked on top.
Yeah. See, we do sometimes, it depends who we go to. We have a cornbread stuffing with andouille sausage in it, which is just out of this world. But and nobody will get this one because I think it's only a raw staple.
We did this already last year, didn't we? Did we do this last year? Yeah, we did this last year. Go ahead.
The Christmas salad.
Yes, we did it last year, and I vomited on my microphone. But anyway.
So, we'll be making the Christmas salad tomorrow before we leave for Rhode Island and sit, much like you, in probably 8 hours of traffic. Nope,
it's going to be home. I'm having it at home this year.
No, I'm talking about going to
UBS
tomorrow. We're going to Rhode Island tomorrow. And instead of it being a 3-hour and 15-minute trip, which is the best we've made it in, it's going to be like 8.
Yeah. Well, everybody listen to this podcast
while you're driving
in your traffic, going to your respective Thanksgivings. And if you're not, you're home, listen anyway. Thank you so much for listening. We thank Brian Compton and Sean. Happy Thanksgiving. And until next week.